Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, we had a rather dramatic Doha Grand Prix weekend, but I mean, it was a race full of drama and controversy and many overtakes and crazy results. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it was very, very interesting with a lot of points of interest. We're going to try to analyze.
Try, there's I think the key word, because there is a lot to unpack from that Grand Prix. We'll start with the Grand Prix winner, Fabio Quartararo. Another win for Yamaha, and another win for Yamaha in very similar circumstances, because much like Maverick Vinales, Fabio didn't get a great start. I think by the end of lap two or three, he was in ninth. And it was quite hard to see how the Yamaha would go forward. There was a lot of Ducatis there. KTM were quick in the early stages. Suzuki were up there with Mir and Rins, but they kept calm. Fabio started to come through the field, doing the same overtakes as Maverick did. And then once he got to the front, he pulled away. It was a Fabio we've not seen for a while.
Yeah, I think that he, I don't know if that word of that verb exists in English, but he tried to clonate what Maverick did the week before, the Sunday before, and he did it really well. I mean, it was a bit surprising for me, because at the beginning of the race they were really, really close. Maverick was behind Fabio, but he couldn't follow him to the front. And I think that when I reviewed the race again, I watched that the main factor, the key moment in Maverick's race, I think it was three laps to go when he was wide at turn one, I think, because he was in P3, I think, and he was really, really close to the front. And otherwise, would have been interesting those last two last laps with him and Fabio in front.
Yeah, for sure. Both Yamahas at a certain point around kind of lap 8, 9, 10, I think, they both started to have pace that was on par with Jorge Martin at the time, who was leading the race. And that for me is interesting, because last year, pretty much any point when the Yamaha got stuck in a pack, it wasn't quick, because the Yamaha, they couldn't run their lines. The front tire got overheated. Wasn't the case this year. You know, both Maverick and Fabio were calm. They didn't make any crazy moves at the start. They just let the race settle, and they saw the rhythm and thought, well, we know that the Ducati will drop tires, so we'll just keep the pace. And then once that started to happen, they moved forward. And it does show to me that, although it's quite early still, that this 2021 bike is definitely a more consistent looking package.
Yeah, somebody from Yamaha, I think we spoke about that in last podcast, but somebody from Yamaha told me that this new chassis is a bit lighter than the old one. So it allows the drivers to be a bit more aggressive on changing directions, so it can help they weigh up to the front. So maybe we can find a bit of explanation there.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing as well, I think, is the rear tire life. Again, that was always a problem for Yamaha. And if you look at the two Petronas bikes,
yeah, exactly,
still a problem there. But for the two factory riders, they seem to have figured it out a little bit. Yes, the pace was slow in the Doha race, but it wasn't crazy slow. I mean, low 55s, high 54s. That's not a slow pace when you look at previous races.
But the problem with the other two Yamahas, the Petronas Yamahas, is that we. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, in my opinion, in my eyes, the good reference is Morbidelli. And Morbidelli, because he's been more consistent last year, much more consistent than any other Yamaha rider. But Morbidelli is in a different kind of bike. So we cannot compare his bike with all the other three Yamahas. And the other reference is Valentino, but Valentino is completely lost at the moment. So we cannot count on them. We cannot take them as a reference because we need more time. We need more races to think or to say that this Yamaha has solved all the rear tire degradation problems that it had on the past.
Yeah, 100%. I asked both Fabio and Maverick yesterday if they felt that this bike, because the results from the first two races of this year are quite similar to last year and that the Yamaha was strong. But even then, we saw in those Jerez races, you remember Maverick, when he got stuck behind the Ducatis, particularly in the Andalusian Grand Prix, he was slow and it took him a long time to get past Valentino as well.
Yeah, Valentino. I remember that sequence really, really, really clear.
So if you compare that to how he went about this race and even the first race, okay, yes, he didn't get to the podium in Doha, but the way he was able to come through, it was different. You know, the power deficit is still there to the Ducatis, but they could make the time up elsewhere.
Yeah, because, for example, the Suzukis did struggle much more in overtaking the other bikes. We've seen yesterday, for example, on Sunday, we saw Rins struggling a lot and getting a lot frustrated by trying to overtake the Ducatis in front because he was much faster than them in the corners. But then as long as they start the main straight, I mean, it was impossible for him to keep up the pace. So while Yamaha, they look more, agile, more comfortable on the overtaking. So yeah, it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, of course we need to see how things go in Portimao. Like I said, I asked Maverick and Fabio if they thought that this felt real, the pace. They're quite grounded about that because they know what happened last year. I think Portimao, if they can go well at Portimao, I think that would be probably the biggest sort of benchmark for where Yamaha is, because even if they don't win that race but they're still strong, I think it would probably be the biggest indicator that we've had that this bike is definitely capable, because Portimao was a bad track for Yamaha last year apart from Franco.
The good thing will be if this happens, not only in Portimao but then in Jerez and then in Le Mans, is that it will show that the problem was actually the bike. I'm not saying that the problem was the riders, but at some point, I mean, I had this question mark, you know? So that would be good because that would demonstrate that the problem was actually the bike, not the riders, or the riders, let's say, head. It was not on the rider's head. So that would be amazing, especially if we have Mark back at any time soon.
100%. That's a very, very good point. I think if that is the case, that might be really, really bad news for Valentino Rossi, because if we look at this weekend, it was a disaster. His worst ever qualifying in 25 years. And he was only 16th in the race. And he's on the same bike as Fabio and Maverick.
Well, and as you say, 100, I mean, I completely agree with you. And I mean, after that, we have to think, okay, what he's going to do? Is he going to renew the contract? Because he said that he was going to renew the contract only if the results were showing that he's still competitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also know as well that Rossi, Ratsan Ritzali alluded to it in the team launch earlier this year, that Rossi has performance criteria he needs to meet before Yamaha will even entertain discussions. And, you know, Petronas are putting a lot of money into that team. And yes, Rossi is a special asset, but Petronas and expects results. And if Rossi can't deliver those results, then he, you know, not to be disrespectful, but he's taking up a good package that in someone else's hands should be in a younger rider's hands or someone else's hands.
I mean, I just point out this topic because I think it's interesting to follow on this. But don't forget that at the moment, Valentino and Frankie both have the same points in the standing. So let's wait and see how they go in the next coming races. But I think there's no doubt that it will be interesting to see how Rossi is able to address this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He needs a big turnaround. Let's go back to the front. The Ducatis again, Pramac leading factory this weekend, all weekend, 1-2 in qualifying, Jorge Martin, Johann Zarco. I mean, let's start with Martin first of all, because we knew the guy was special, but wow, you know, pole position and that race as well. You know, he said after pole, today's not my time to win, I'm going to need to be a rookie. He certainly didn't look like a rookie in that race.
Well, I think that and the most important thing is that he did all perfectly. I mean, he didn't do any mistake during the, I think I'm not wrong by saying that he was leading 17 laps. So it has to be very difficult for a rookie to be leading the package leading the pack 17 races without making any single mistake. I mean, for the first time in MotoGP, leading a race and being able to be there during 17 laps without doing any mistake, wow, that's impressive. That's impressive. And I think that he has learned like two seasons in 17 laps.
You have to, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you have to say the way he controlled that race, and like you say, leading 17 laps with that pressure but not showing it, it was very, very much Marc Marquez like.
Yeah, you know, the good thing is that maybe because of this, because he was not feeling any pressure, because he doesn't have any pressure at the moment, that's why he was doing, and that's why he was so relaxed leading the race. Maybe that's one of those reasons. But yeah, definitely, I think there's much more to come from this guy.
Yeah, and that's exciting, because if we see anything like we saw in Doha, then, you know, that I predicted at the start of the season, you remember, that we might see a rookie win a race, and I feel pretty confident about that now, because, you know, Martin, he is on a factory bike. Okay, to be fair, he has been in Qatar the whole time, so he knows the track very well. But let's not forget, he only had 11 days on the bike before that Grand Prix, which, if you consider past rookies, they have had 2 days of testing in Valencia, 2 days of testing in Jerez, 6 days of testing pre-season.
Yeah. And we have other examples, like Pol Espargaró, that he's been in MotoGP for so many years, and he switched to the Honda, and then he's struggling. Despite he says that he's getting closer and closer, he's struggling. So, yeah, I mean, full credit to Jorge Martin.
Yeah, 100%. I think, though, the biggest praise of the weekend, I think, has to go to Johann Zarco, because we talked about it in the first race, that perhaps the way Zarco's talking, the way he's approaching the season, and the way he's riding currently makes him perhaps Ducati's leader. But I think we saw that again for two reasons, and we'll tackle the first one first. That race was brilliant from Zarco, the way he managed it, the way he was clever about it. And of course, he comes away with second. He leads the championship. You compare that to 2 years ago when his career was almost finished. You know, he's almost a completely new guy. It's great to see, first of all, but it shows just how good a rider Zarco is.
Yeah, I think that he has just find the right balance at the moment in a really good team, but not in a factory team. Maybe he will be in the near future, but in a good team, but not in the factory team. Don't forget that he was in the Avintia last year. So for him, going into Pramac has been a clear step up. So I think that he's feeling really well. I mean, Pramac is a really, really, really good, really professional team, and they have the full package from the Ducati. So yeah, I think it's just the right environment. Don't forget that Jack Miller always said that Pramac was like a family for him, so that he was feeling very comfortable there. And of course, when you are in a satellite team and you have this kind of experience like Johan has at the moment, I mean, maybe it's better to ride this kind of bike with this kind of full package in a non-factory team, because the pressure is not all the time on you. You know what I mean? So now the pressure is on Pecco and on especially on Jack. But for Zarco, he's enjoying, and we all know how fast this guy can be. So yeah, let's see, because on the other hand, it was a bit surprising that it was a big surprise for me that we haven't seen a Ducati winning any of those two first races. So if they struggled, if they were not able to win here in Qatar, let's see, because I think they will have more problems in some other tracks.
The second part of what I wanted to talk about Zarco was and why I think he is certainly more the leader of Ducati than... Though we all thought it was going to be Jack Miller, because pre-season he was the favourite. He was so good in testing. And of course, he's got 7 years of Grand Prix experience now. This is his year to deliver. But once again, it wasn't a great race yet. He had arm pump at the end of the race, which is fair enough. But the way... There was one point for me in that race which sort of showed to me that Jack still isn't ready to lead a factory, and that was his collision with Joan Mir. Because, I mean, it was deemed a racing incident, but Joan Mir isn't convinced, and I don't think we are either, Yuri. We saw Jack look over at Joan. He knew he was there. And the way he reacted, the fact that he went in with that and reacted the way he did to that earlier collision with Joan Mir, it's Miller's, his head's not in the right space.
Yeah, I
still
think he, as many riders say sometimes, he just in that particular moment, he just switched off the brain. That's what happened. He was so frustrated, and then he tried to pay back Joan for a touch before, which I think that is not acceptable. It is unacceptable in a race in MotoGP, not even in Moto2, of course, not even in Moto3, but I mean, in MotoGP, it has to be, I mean, it is unacceptable that a rider can play this kind of, you know, justice by itself. So, because don't forget that at that point, if Mir crashes, I mean, his body lies in front of the main straight.
Yeah.
It would have been, it could have been a disaster.
Yeah. So, and the collision was at 200 kilometers an hour. You know, it wasn't as if this was at the exit of the corner. This was full on as they were winding up the power. It was, you know, why he didn't get a penalty to me is baffling, but we've also, this isn't the first time race direction
especially because they are very let's say severe with the young riders, but theoretically the MotoGP are the the example. I mean, and the young have to follow the MotoGP rider's behavior. So what's the point on leave him without any penalty? I didn't get it, to be honest. But anyway, yeah, I think that when what John says and what Juan said straight after the race, yeah, he says that Jack was frustrated because he is not performing at the level that he supposed to perform, and that, yeah, I think at the moment we can feel that he's a bit under pressure, and because he knows that he's not the fastest Ducati rider, and yeah, at some point Ducati will have to make a decision.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, he was angry about the earlier contact with Mir at turn 10. Mir admitted that move he made was aggressive, but the touch was very, very minimal. It wasn't as if he was smacked out the way. So I think even then Miller's reaction to that was out of order, because I've seen Miller put on harder moves on riders and, you know, he's brushed it off. So
I mean, what is clear to me is that we cannot compare both maneuvers. Impossible. I mean, we cannot compare both maneuvers because, and okay, yeah, Mir was aggressive, but yeah, but Mir was aggressive in a context. Miller was deliberate. So that's huge, huge difference. I mean, and Mir was trying to overtake. John was trying to overtake Jack at that point. Miller was not trying to do anything other than try to keep him out of the track.
The worrying thing for me is it sets a bad precedent, the fact that Miller got away with
100%.
You know, first of all, I mean, Valentino Rossi talked a little bit about this during the weekend because he wasn't so happy with Brad Binder from the first race. I think Rossi, in all honesty, is maybe blowing that incident out of proportion, but he's not wrong in the fact that there is a level of aggression amongst some riders that isn't being tamed.
Yeah. I've been writing a feature, and I recover a quote from Valentino Rossi last year after the Austrian Grand Prix, and he was worried about, because there was a lot of criticism over race direction and the stewards panel, and Valentino said that there was he was a bit worried about the aggressivity of the young riders, the Moto3 riders.
Yeah, and that I remember
they,
that, yeah.
They needed to stop this. So what's the point? How are you going to stop if you allow the MotoGP riders to do this?
Yeah, and we saw in that Moto3 race in Doha that nothing has really been done. So
exactly.
Yeah, you're right. And the problem is I've got a feature lined up for later in the week about the Binder-Rossi controversy. And in a sense, a lot of this is sort of Rossi's making, because of course he had all those, you know, you remember the Gibernau incident, and I remember Setti talking about this last year. He said, look, I don't like that incident because, not because Rossi hit me off, but because it set the precedent for the rest of it set the precedent in MotoGP for aggressive racing. And I think he's not wrong, because if you look at all the guys coming up, all the young guys, were all guys watching Rossi, were all kids that were watching Rossi, and now they've gotten to a position where they can race. And they're doing the exact same things.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, 100%. So, yeah, that's a matter of perspectives and who did what.
Mm-hmm. 100%. For Juan Mir, it was probably one of the more difficult races he's had, not because of that contact, well, because of a couple of contacts, but he came away from it. He came away from Qatar not the happiest because, you know, the results haven't been brilliant. And it's not been the greatest of starts to his title defense. But I don't think Suzuki can be too upset, because the pace in general in the races was quite good. It was just circumstances didn't work for them. Rins had the problem last week with the launch crawl. Mir had his problems with qualifying and then in the race. But I think going forward, I think Suzuki do look like they are in a much better position than they did coming into the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they are pretty relaxed. I spoke with them after the race, and they are a bit frustrated for the result, but they are relaxed because, I mean, even Alex said that they know that they're going to struggle in four tracks, but other than that, Yeah, they are pretty confident that they have a really good package, and then they were going to be able to show it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that Rin spoke about that they're missing still is this ride height adjuster on the straights. They don't, obviously they don't have the start device on the front, but Yamaha doesn't have that either. But the thing that Suzuki is still missing is this rear ride height adjuster, which is quite surprising because everyone else has it apart from a couple of the Ducatis, the Aventia bikes, and Suzuki. So it's a bit strange that they haven't got that, but obviously it didn't hinder them so much last year, but now it obviously,
well, they don't need that. Well, don't forget that they have only two bikes on the grid. So
yeah,
well, they don't have that much possibilities in order to get information. So yeah, that's one of the main reasons. And yeah, don't forget that, I mean, Suzuki is a small factory. I mean, not Suzuki, the holding, but the MotoGP division is really a small factory in compared with Honda, of course, and in compared with Yamaha. So they do the things step by step. They do really small steps. But when they normally bring a new element, it works straight away. So, yeah, Mir the other day was saying that maybe we need to push Suzuki to bring more stuff faster. But, yeah, I mean, in the end, without this device, that for sure it would help them, the bike works perfectly. And to be honest, I think that if you have a good package that works, adding this kind of element can destabilize a bit the performance.
That's fair enough. I mean, if you remember Yamaha last year when they first introduced it, they kind of went back and forward because the system they had, it wasn't very refined. It was quite aggressive and they couldn't quite get it to work. So it's not an easy thing to bring. So that's fair enough. Honda, I want to talk about quickly because, I had to chuckle last night when Espargaro's debrief because he was talking about his result and he called it disgusting, which I thought was quite harsh because it was one of those races where it was dead easy to make a mistake and Paul did make a couple. Yeah. He ended up 13th, but the race pace was there. The biggest problem they have is qualifying. They just can't get this Honda to work in qualifying, which isn't a new problem.
Yeah. We just have to wait to Mark coming back to see how this package can work in qualifying in his hands. But yeah, at the moment they are struggling because we've seen, I mean, Alex Marquez crashed again. We've seen Nakagami nowhere, and Paul, was struggling. Well, he was not that bad before the mistake. He was able to finish in top six, top five, but yeah, he made a mistake at the end of, I think it was turn one, and yeah, I mean, it ruined his race with the really poor qualifying. So let's see. I think he's a bit, well, not worried, but yeah, he's under pressure. 100%, because he knows that he needs to make better results.
Mm-hmm. Well, he said after Sunday's race that he knows he's on the best bike, or he feels he's on the best bike, and he feels he can fight for this championship, which is good to hear. But you know, if they're qualifying 14th and 15th, you're not going to win a championship very easily doing that. Not in modern day MotoGP. Yes, Juan Mir had bad qualifyings, but the Suzuki was a better bike and it was a better race package than the Hondas.
Yeah, but I mean, I cannot imagine this year with the same ups and downs than last year. So if you fail one, two or three races this year, it will be more difficult than last year to recover. So I think that more than ever, the consistency will be the key.
Yeah, for sure. Finally, I just want to touch on KTM because they took a gamble with, well, I say a gamble, they were kind of forced into running the medium front tire. And it paid off for them. You know, Binder was eighth in the end. Oliveira would have had a better result had his dashboard not switched off. So he just didn't know. He didn't know what engine map he was in. He didn't know what gear he was in. He had no idea what he was doing. So it's hard to analyze where KTM is, because the bike on race pace always looked good, but qualifying it didn't work. And then obviously with the tire, they ruined the front tire, the soft tire, because they can't use it. They can't use the hard tire because it was too cold. And the medium tire isn't a tire that anyone likes. So KTM, and even in the race, they struggled with it, because on the change of direction from the harder side to the soft side.
That's how special this bike is.
So,
it was surprising for me to see Brad Binder this race, but I'm really curious and I'm really excited to see how they are gonna perform in Portimao, where Oliveira made an exhibition last year, and after that, because we all expect a lot from them and from this new bike, and this first Qatar races leave me a bit of, bad taste.
Yeah. It's they are 100% convinced that it was just the circuit. We know the circuit doesn't suit KTM. They've never liked the circuit. So they're convinced that when they get to better tracks or other tracks, they will be fine. So Portimao will be a good... If Oliveira goes to Portimao and is quick there, like he was last year, then I think that's probably going to be confirmation enough of what KTM has been saying. But then again, we're going to go to a lot of tracks KTM didn't go to last year, places like Mugello.
That
maybe shouldn't suit the KTM so much, because it's more fast and flowing, and we know the KTM likes tighter tracks. So
yeah.
It's quite hard to sort of understand, but I think they will go better. I think the bike does look better, and look at the race pace,
they have to. Otherwise, the whole project would be in trouble.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is the year that they wanted to start winning races. They already did that a year early, so naturally the next step has to be fighting for the championship. There's no real excuse.
That would be a surprise.
I think
They are not able to build a really good bike or to get good results, just because the competition the level of the competition is really high. And don't forget that this year the Aprilia looks really, really on place. So, I think that KTM will be better, of course, than in Qatar, but maybe not as good as last year.
Mm. That's fair enough. It's interesting we're going to end on you making a positive comment about Aprilia. We don't get that so often. Usually it's quite negative.
Well, because, I mean, no, it's not that I have anything against Aprilia, but I think they really deserve full credit.
Yeah.
At least 100%. Until now. So it's just that they have made a really, really, really crazy and weird decisions in the past, and now they are doing things in a proper way, at least in my opinion, and I can be wrong 100%. But I think that they deserve my full applause.
No, I fully agree with you. Alesha's been riding well. The bike looks good. They look from one race to the other. They made a step. So it looks like this bike is definitely better. But we shall see. Thank you very much, Yuri, for your company. As always,
thank you.
Finally, you don't need to do any more ridiculous 4 a.m. race starts for now. Yeah. For a couple of weeks at least.
3 a.m. here. Last one.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very fun. Thank you very much, Yuri, and thank you to the listener as well. If you like what you heard, go listen to all of our other podcasts on our other podcast platforms. And obviously we've been busy like hell over the weekend writing stuff, and we'll be busy like hell for the next few days, so keep it with Autosport and motorsport.com for all your post-Doha Grand Prix reaction. Until next week, when we'll be back to preview the Portuguese Grand Prix and hopefully welcome back Marc Marquez to the World Championship, it is a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.
Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.